Du har ringet til Camilla Lærkesen. Jeg tager i princip ikke min telefon, men du er velkommen til at sende en sms efter klartonen. Velkommen til Bevidst Introverts podcast. Jeg hedder Camilla, og i den her podcastserie har jeg inviteret en række introverte danskere til at dele deres livserfaringer på godt og ondt. Velkommen til. Skru op for de stille stemmer. I den her episode af Bevidst Introvert skal du møde faktisk en af verdens førende speakere og trænere, når det kommer til salg og netværk for introverte. Han hedder Matthew Pollard, og han kommer fra Australien, så det her interview kommer til selvfølgelig at foregå på engelsk med min forfærdelige danske accent og hans i øvrigt udmærket australske accent. Han har lovet at prøve at huske at tale langsomt, så vi kan følge med. For jeg ved ikke med dig, men det er ikke så tit, at jeg lytter til engelsk med australsk accent. Jeg kunne simpelthen tale med Matthew hele dagen, fordi det er vanvittigt spændende, det han fortæller. Og jeg kan mærke, at jeg er enig i så meget, han siger, og i hans tilgang til verden. Og jeg må sige, at han lever fuldt ud op til mine kriterier for gæster til podcasten. Han er i den grad en introvert rollemodel, og han er en meget succesfuld introvert rollemodel, som har en vigtig pointe om, at hvis du vil have succes her i livet, så er du også nødt til at få succes som den, du er. Du kan ikke blive en hamrende dygtig sælger som introvert, hvis du prøver at blive det som en ekstrovert. Hvis du bruger de ekstrovertes redskaber i stedet for de introvertes. Så den vil jeg lige fremhæve, og så vil jeg ellers bare ønske dig god fornøjelse. Og så må du bære over med min danske accent på mit engelsk.
Welcome on this show, Matthew. It's nice to have you.
I'm ecstatic to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
And I think you should do the introduction of yourself, because it's quite the story. I've been reading a lot on your site, and I think you should tell what you want this audience to know about you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the basic, or I should say the brief biography is that, you know, I grew up with the reading speed of a sixth grader in late high school. I was super introverted. I intended to have a year off to find myself, and I fully intended to just do a year of data entry. But losing my job just before Christmas, the only job I could get in Australia, because we take our summer and Christmas break at the same time, was commission only sales. And literally after a 5 days worth of product training and not a single second of sales training, I get thrown on a road and get told to go sell. And I mean, it was 93 doors of getting told to get a real job, getting sworn at before I made my first sale. And I made about $70. But unlike a lot of people that assumed that sales was this natural ability you either have or you didn't, which is probably why 18 of my training group of 20 didn't come back on day two, what I realized is that sales had to be a system, a learnable process. And I went to work learning that, and I actually taught myself how to do it, because I mean, this was well before podcasts, watching YouTube videos. And I typed in the sales system, and every day I would spend 6 hours out in the field applying what I learned, 6 to 8 hours at home, you know, learning the next stage. I'd spend weekends doing, you know, 16 hour days, really just really going through and practicing and practicing. But I quickly got better. I was at 75 doors, then I was at 36 doors, then I was at 21, then I was at 18, then I eventually got it down to making a sale on average every 3 doors. And about 6 weeks in, my manager pulled me aside, and I thought I was in trouble. I mean, I was the quiet guy that handed in my paperwork downstairs, and I looked at all those boisterous sales reps upstairs talking about how they ripped that customer off or got that deal, or, you know, all the stuff that, you know, me as an introvert really didn't feel comfortable being around. And they said, Matt, we're kind of blown away by this, but you're actually the number one salesperson in the company, which was, I mean, they employed thousands of staff. They were the largest sales and marketing company in the Southern Hemisphere. And it took 6 weeks. So, you know, they naturally thought that because I could sell, I could manage. I don't know why people think that, because, I mean, I had no idea how to manage. And my next training group of 20 people all left me. But I went back to YouTube, learned how to manage, got good at that. Got promoted about 7 times in the space of a year, then went and started my own business. And fast forward just shy of a decade, I'd been responsible for 5 multi-million dollar success stories. But I think what's most important in my story is I went from scared to sell, really terrified, to teaching, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands now through my work. And on top of that, you know, now I've created a method for networking. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that I'm passionate about is helping introverts realize they're not second-class citizens. Their path to success is just different. And that path doesn't include becoming more extroverted, because that's a path for disaster, feeling inauthentic, and just not getting to the outcomes that you deserve.
Yeah, I love that you say that, because that's the advice I got my whole life. Oh, you just need to be more outgoing. You can learn that. I thought that can't work, because that doesn't feel authentic and it's hard. And if it has to be like that the rest of my life, it's going to be a very long life.
It's the world's worst advice. I mean, people tell kids from young, they tell their parents that the kids aren't mixing enough and they need to behave more extroverted. And I mean, you just introduced me to somebody that is writing an entire training on networking. And if you didn't introduce me, my bet is that they would have tried to find the extroverted behaviors that we as introverts should try to mimic. And that just doesn't work. I mean, firstly, introverts love to plan and prepare. And if we don't leverage that, that's a problem. But we also have this amazing ability to empathize and actively listen, which some might say extroverts aren't so great at. It's not to say they can't learn it, but they need coaching. But I think the biggest hurdle for introverts is, firstly, we have to get over the belief barrier that we can. And then the second is that success for us doesn't require going out and behaving like an extrovert, which is one of the things that I struggle with when I see a lot of introverts succeed. You know, it's funny how many introverts I've interviewed on my Introverts Edge podcast, or where they talk about the fact that they're now more extroverted because they enjoy networking, they enjoy sales, they enjoy presenting from stage. I'm like, yeah, but are you still tired afterwards? Yes. Well, you're still an introvert. Like, you can't change who you are. That the fact is, you are still tired. Are you as tired? No. Well, that means that you now enjoy it. You don't take as much emotional energy to do it. You're not stressed as much. You come in more planned and prepared. But that doesn't mean it doesn't still take energy from you. It just takes less than it did in the past. And the truth is that a lot of the things that extroverts do actually create mental angst for us as introverts. So we actually have to lean into strategies that will work for us. Now, that's not to say, and you know, I'm part of the Global Gurus list of top 30 sales professionals, and I know a lot of other introverts on that list. And actually, Get Abstract just did a summary of my book, and they did a report on me about this. And I said, I'm not the only introvert that teaches. I'm not the only introvert teaching sales and networking. I'm just the only one that has the word introvert on the cover. Yeah. And the reason I put that out there is it's so important for people to realize that there is so much help out there by other introverted experts. They just don't happen to classify themselves as introverted experts. And the reason why it's so important that that's why I founded National Introverts Week. It's why we run the Quietly Influential Summit every year. It's why we do so much to focus on spotlighting what I call secret introvert titans, people that are successful, they just so happen to be introverted too. Because what happens is we project extroversion on anyone that we can see as being successful. Like right now, people hearing me, they might have thought, oh, well, he's clearly not introverted because he's articulate. Well, it's got nothing to do with that. And everything that I'm sharing right now is my absolute strength. It's what I know well. It's well rehearsed. It's well practiced. And I'm talking about my favorite topic. So of course I'm clear. Now, you may also say, oh, well, clearly you're not as introverted as you once were. Well, no, I actually get really tired at the end of things like this. Now, that's true. The fact is, I don't get as anxious about the interviews going in. I've done over 150 of these. I know every question that could catch me out has been asked, and I now have perfected the answer for it. How do you get stressed about that now? So now I can just enjoy the conversation, be more active and present in the conversation. But it doesn't mean that I'm now more extroverted. It means, for me, that I have taken the time to leverage my natural strengths, so not to come across as extroverted, so that I can be articulate and clearly get across my message, which is not an extroverted behavior. And actually, to get to a point that is thought out is actually much more of an introvert behavior. An extrovert just enjoys the conversation, but they're happy for it to go anywhere. The fact that it ends up in a specific point that happens to be what they want or something that they're happy with, well, that's a bonus.
Yeah, exactly. I get the same thing. Like, oh, but you're an extrovert now. Or if I didn't know, I would never know that you're introverted. And now I've started saying, actually, yes, you would. you just don't know what to look for. But if you look closely, you can see on my face, you can see it in my eyes, you can see it in the way I move, you can hear it in my voice. You know that I'm an introvert, but you don't know what to look for. And when I see you here on my screen, I think you have some of the same facial expressions, you have the same way of movement. I think we have so much that tips people off if they know, but they just think, oh, you're articulate, so then you're an extrovert.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I speak from stage, and you know, I speak all over the world, and up until I tell my own introverted story, everyone, I can tell every introvert in the room when I'm talking on sales or networking or business growth, every introvert in the room has switched off and they have said, you know, oh, these strategies won't work for me. It's another extrovert telling me how easy it is. I don't buy into it. And then I share my introverted story and it is a complete shift for everybody. Because, I mean, why is it? I mean, for every introvert listening, I mean, we all know that we're not that person with, you know, we're not, well, that's, what's that character at Lord of the Rings hiding in the, you know, the tunnel? That's not who we are. Like we can, you know, it doesn't make any difference to your, you know, physical attractiveness, the way you hold yourself. In a lot of ways, it doesn't make any difference to how energetic you can be from stage. And I can tell you, I've suffered from this issue myself. There's a guy called Dan Walshmit that I saw speak at one of my original speaking events. And I went, wow, I wish I was able to capture an audience like him. He's just so extroverted. Now, I always think my content is good. I like to think my content's great, which is why people allow me to, you know, back then to speak from stage. And now I see myself as a great speaker. But the switch in my head was when I started to realize all these people that I aspired to be as dynamic as, regardless of how good their content was. A lot of them told me they were introverted, including Dan Walshmit, who I said, oh, it's easy for you, you're an extrovert. And he's, what are you talking about? I'm an introvert. My family always laugh at me that I can be this person and then, you know, go home and relax. And I went, my gosh, I'm doing it too, after with everything that I know, because I'm going into the world of speaking. Even though I tell introverts to not project extroversion on other salespeople, other networkers, here I am doing it in some, you know, different space. So yeah. One of the things I always suggest is that we as introverts can learn off other introverts really, really well, because they can get us beyond that belief issue that then we can now feel like we can learn the strategies. Also, I will say with my networking book, it's different. I've got some unique strategies in there that are my own IP. And the reason for that is I didn't like a lot of those tacky elevator pitches. And I just feel like for introverts, they sound rehearsed and they're just uncomfortable. But for sales, my sales book, I actually own up to it, because for me, again, my whole brand's built on authenticity. I had to be authentic. I said, there's not a single piece of advice that I'm going to give you, a strategy in this book, that you will not find in another book. What I've done is made sure that there isn't a strategy in this book that won't resonate and work for an introvert, i.e. there are no bulldog techniques, there are no hard closes, and I've put it together in a methodical process that focuses on continuous improvement and experimentation, changing one thing at a time, as opposed to going in and just winging things and, you know, working the room, which just doesn't work for us, right? So for the people listening, I want you to know, like, and the reason I say this is there are people that come to me and they say, Matt, you know, what would you suggest that I tell my introverted kids? Or they ask for me for help with things that are outside the zone of my genius, which is why we have that platform called Introvert You, which we're now showcasing a lot of other introverted experts. But the truth is that, you know, most people you see that are successful usually are following a regimented process. You know, Brian Tracy says the top 10% of all sales performers have a planned presentation. Well, what does that sound like? That sounds like an introverted behavior. And that's why most of the people that are the best in the business in the world of sales, even though they may be ashamed to say it, which is ridiculous, because I think this is the generation of introverts, right, where we can be proud. But you'll find that most of the best in the business at most things, including what you would consider outgoing extroverted arenas where you need to be gregarious, are mostly introverted. And if, you know, don't believe me, I mean, think of small talk. Well, Jay Leno, Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres, as unpopular as she may be to people at this time, they're all introverted. You look at sales. Well, Zig Ziglar, the most well-known sales trainer ever, was an introvert. Ivan Meisner, the founder of BNI, the world's largest networking group in the world, he's an introvert. Billion-dollar brands, right from, you know, Bill Gates, right through to who everyone knows is Microsoft, right through to Brian Smith, who everyone may not know is the founder of billion-dollar sheepskin boot company, UGG Boots. And then you go into acting, you've got Leonardo DiCaprio, right? There's, you know, Tom Hanks, there's so many. So what is it that we introverts can't do if the best in the business at lots of those fields are introverted? What we can't do is believe in ourselves. We're our own worst enemies.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the problem is not being an introvert, but yet we talk a lot about introvert and how we can do this and manage this. So if the problem is not being an introvert, what is the problem, you think?
The problem is that society has created this word, whether you call it a word or a sentence or a categorization of this gift of gab. Now, I do not have gift of gab. Well, actually, I do when it comes to topics I love and enjoy, right? And I always say, try and get an introvert to shut up when they love a specific topic, right? So we have lots of things to share, especially if we feel like we're in a comfortable conversation. Now, if on the other hand, you're talking to them about something they couldn't care less about, well, introverts, because they're authentic, they can't feign interest in a lot of things. They won't just talk your ear off about something they don't know. You know, I'm a CSP, which is the highest designation you can receive as a speaker. And I was at a summit recently, and there was a round table about a specific topic, and somebody asked specifically for my advice. And so because of that, I was giving them advice. And the moderator said, Matt, if we could get you to stop for a second, because there are other people that you want to contribute. And I'd been quiet up until then. But this person specifically asked for my advice, and it was in my zone of genius. So I responded, and I literally went into coaching mode, and I gave them step by step what they could do. And you could tell the guy was writing a ton of notes. But what it was is all the other extroverts, there were extroverts, I mean, speaking is a lot of extroverts in the room, that were getting frustrated because they had things to say and they wanted to speak at this time, right? So I then be quiet. And at the end, the guy that was I was helping came up to me afterwards and said, could you finish that line of thought? But everybody else that contributed, it wasn't their zone of genius. You could tell they were just spitballing ideas. Yet when we got to the next topic, it wasn't my zone of genius, so I was quiet. And the moderator came up afterwards to apologize to me and say, I hope I didn't upset you, because, you know, we wanted to give everyone else a chance to talk. And I said, you didn't upset me. When we got to that, that person asked specifically for my advice. It was my zone of genius. And I felt, considering I knew the expertise of everyone else in the room, that nobody else would have had anything to add that was even close to the advice I gave. So me wanting to give value, I made sure that I gave value. But for the next question, I had nothing to add. I wasn't upset. I had nothing to add. And I, from a point of authenticity, won't just spin off my mouth for the fact that there might be something logical that comes out of it or helpful out of it. And he went, oh, that really makes sense. And that's really, you know, I really appreciate you saying that. And I'm like, how is this stuff that, you know, we have to articulate and we have to say? So when we look at introversion, firstly, introverts should not feel like they have to talk about things that do not interest them, or they shouldn't feel like they have to speak up if they have nothing to say. Now, that to be said, I've had executives from large organizations that have reached out to me and said, Matt, I never have anything to say we might have an auditorium of 40, 50 people and we bring in a specialty speaker, or there's somebody, you know, from the organization that's coming in to speak. And I, you know, everybody's asking questions and it's how they get noticed. I never have anything to ask because I'm not great at doing that on the fly. And I'm like, I'm confused. Do they not have LinkedIn profiles? And they're like, well, yeah, but what do you mean? And I'm like, well, why would you not just check what their topic matter is or what they're currently sharing and posting about or liking? Clearly, they're probably going to be talking about that topic. Immerse yourself in that topic, and then you'll have a question planned and prepared. And you can wait until people have, you know, if it's not about the topic, and say, you know, wait until they've gone with their questions and say, look, I know this is off topic, but I've been following your content for a while. A while could be 2 days. And I have this well thought out question. I've seen people that, you know, I spoke at Intel at their global sales and marketing conference, and an executive came up to me afterwards and said, Matt, he met me at the hotel because we were staying at the same hotel, and we just ran into each other. And 30 minutes, I was just trying to get my, you know, a meal so I could go back to my room and hide away. I just finished speaking, but it was an enjoyable conversation. And he said, look, I hope you don't mind me talking your ear off. It's just, I feel like I've got so much I can share with you because after seeing you speak, you know, I feel like I know you on a personal level. I can't do that with everybody else here. And I'm like, I'm confused. And by the way, the words you want to use is, when did you decide that? I love asking people that question. When did you decide that? Because the truth is, there's no basis for it. It's just we tell ourselves these stories. So the answer was, when I asked him that question, he said, well, you know, I come here and everybody here is flown in from different places and I don't know them well. So I just have nothing to connect with them on. And I said, I'm confused. And my response to, oh, when did you decide, is always, I'm confused. I said, what I know about Intel, you're considered a newbie if you've been there for less than 20 years. Is that a fair statement? He's like, yes. I said, so most people at this global leadership conference, I get they're the higher level people, but there's 80 people here. My bet is that they've come to at least 10 of these, most of them. Yes. Do you know who's coming in advance? Yes. If not, you would know who came last year. Yes. Okay. If you know that list, couldn't you not go on LinkedIn and look at everybody's profile, look at who you would like to meet and discuss, connect with them in advance and say you were checking out some of the things they were posting and you hope that you get an opportunity to touch base with them before, you know, during the conference, because you'd love to, you know, you just finished the same book or you'd love to discuss A, B and C, or just because, you know, you'd like to discuss the objectives in the department or whatever, right? It's even easier than sales networking or, you know, prospecting out, you know, with small businesses. And I said, he said, oh, you're right. I could have done that. And I said, then you come and you feel like you've got a bunch of pre-planned meetings. I do the same with small business. You know, that my passion is seeing small businesses succeed because I feel like there's something heroic about an introvert that has enough talent, skill, and belief in themselves to go and start their own business. And I just hate them stuck in that endless hamster wheel of struggling to find interested people, trying to set themselves apart, you know, really trying to make the sale, but feeling like people care about price because usually if you give them no other option, which most people commoditize themselves, what else are they going to buy on? But what happens is that they say, well, I go to the networking room and then I end up, you know, not having the conversations I want, or I don't want to be pitchy and I walk out with cards and it doesn't work for me. I'm like, how is it you've not connected with the people beforehand? Most groups have photos of who was there last month. You can ask those people if they're coming back. You know, meetup groups have LinkedIn profiles connected to them. I go profile shopping. You know, if I'm going to a conference, I go through the app and I go profile shopping because I don't want to waste my time talking to someone that's going to try and sell me insurance. So that's a waste of time. Spending 20 minutes going through all the profiles and going, these ones seem interesting, connecting with them in advance and saying, I'm passionate about this. Do you think this would be the right event to go to? Of course they're going to say yes. And then they'll probably, if they're extroverted, want to introduce you to everybody. And if they're introverted, go, oh, finally a familiar face. Yeah. And they'll come over and talk to you. So a lot of times we as introverts get in our own way because we put these barriers up. That being said, society also has a lot to fix, because if you're in an organization, your HR department probably is sitting there going, poor little Matthew, he's an introvert. We can't put him in a sales role. Well, that's because they don't understand what introversion is, or we can't put them into a leadership role for the same reason. Well, we need to fix that. Also, we need to start educating children and teachers and parents around the fact that introversion is not a disadvantage. And if we force them to become more extroverted, we're actually pushing them and it creates anxiety and stress. What we need to do is get them to lean into their strengths so that as they grow up, or as we grow up, we have that character strength to say, I'm not going to put myself in that uncomfortable position, or I am going to put myself in an uncomfortable position, but I'm going to do all this planning and preparation first because I believe that I need to lean into my introverted strengths as opposed to trying to be someone that I'm not.
Yeah, exactly. And some people say that introversion, it connects to low self-esteem. And I think, no, but low self-esteem can come from being an introvert. If you have been told your whole life, you're not really good enough, you should try to be a little more of something that you're not. So yes, a lot of introverts may have low self-esteem, but it's not because they're introverted. It's because they've always been told you're not good enough.
Absolutely. I think we can frame that by saying, if you were told that your gender, your ethnicity, your religion made you a lesser human for long enough, maybe you would believe that. Now, I'm so glad. I mean, those battles have all been fought in big organizations and even in small businesses and in interpersonal relations, you know, in our personal lives. I mean, we still have a long way to go with some of those, but at least that dialogue, I mean, at least the individual that perhaps might have been told they weren't good enough is starting to at least believe in themselves that there isn't a barrier and we're starting to work through it. We've got a lot of work to do. And to be honest, I don't even think we could be having this introversion conversation now unless those conversations were much further along. But the truth is that introversion is an interesting beast because the problem that we have is twofold. One is that a lot of introverts believe that there's something wrong with them. So we're actually creating our own artificial barrier. But then the world tells us that we're going to be disadvantaged. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of really great books out there on introversion, but some of them come from a point of, poor you, you're an introvert, let me show you how to survive in an extroverted world. And I don't believe that. That's why my book series is called The Introvert's Edge. It's why on my podcast, at the end of every episode, I say, what do you believe your introvert's edge is? Like, we don't say, oh, you know, those extroverts, they're disadvantaged because they aren't great at listening and they're not that empathetic and they're terrible planners. We say, if they need those skills, that they should go and learn them. Why do we not say, if we have skills gaps as, and by the way, an extrovert can't, it's not easy for them. They can't just empathize. They can't just listen. They have to learn strategies that we introverts have naturally. Why is it that we build training for those people that aren't natural at those things to get them to lean into their strengths and fill those issues like skills gaps? Yet when it comes to an introvert, we're like, oh, they can't do it because there's this natural barrier. It is a skills gap, and we have to lean in to the strengths to sidestep things like uncomfortable small talk. And, you know, I've got a training on the Introvert You platform called the No Small Talk Sales Meeting, which leverages story to generate rapport, but helps highlight planning and preparation so that people don't mind you just jumping in. Wow, this person comes prepared, right? This person obviously knows how to be efficient with their time. It's a positive thing. It works well for introverts. And for extroverts, they hate it because they can't do the small talk thing, right? So what you've got to look at right across the board is that as introverts, we are in our own way, but also the world is in our way. But why would you let any of those things get in your way, right? So there's a study from the National Science Foundation that says that we tell ourselves 16 to 60,000 things a day. Now, hard to believe until you realize that you can do what's equivalent to a presidential 60-minute speech in about 60 seconds talking to yourself, right? So we tell ourselves all these things. If you're constantly telling yourself, I can't do this, it's easier for them. If you're in this negative feedback loop, Henry Ford that said, if you think you can or if you think you can't, you're right. And if you don't think you can place in a marathon, why would you, or even finish, why would you train? And the truth is most people feel like they're always going to have to accept subpar performance of themselves. And in the past, you would have been able to accept the fact that perhaps other people were telling you and that's okay. Today, especially if you're listening to this episode, from now on, it's an excuse because I'm telling you that you can, and I'm telling you for everything that you think you can't do, it might be because the strategy you've not tried or because the strategies you've employed were either you had a belief barrier or it employed strategies that worked for extroverts. But from tomorrow onwards, know that you can lean into introverted strategies that will leverage your natural strengths, sidestep or fill those natural skills gaps, and then allow you to be successful. So from today on, you're on notice. It's your fault.
Yeah. I'm just going to join in with something I always teach, and it's going to maybe sound, I'll just say it and you'll judge it, because I always say that you can, but then I add, but you don't have to. Because I think some of us have heard for all of our lives, you should learn to do this and that. And I've been for years trying to make it as a journalist, and I hate it. You have to call people you don't know. You have to small talk a lot with to get stories. You have to call people who don't want to speak to you. So, but I just wanted to make it just to show the world that I could do it. So I always say when I teach small talk or networking, of course you can, but you don't have to. Because when you don't have to, you get to want to.
I think that's a really important thing to point out. And, you know, it's funny. I see really intelligent people that fail at business And they're like, why is it that I'm really intelligent, but all these other people that are, you know, perhaps aren't as bright, fast as me, perhaps they've got six kids and I don't even have kids, they're I'm not succeeding and they are. And a lot of times it's because they just focus on one business. Just because you're really smart doesn't mean you should start three businesses or start a really hyper, you know, intellect rich business. Like sometimes the simplest ideas work. So just because you can doesn't mean you should, I think is a really important thing for all elements of life, because we do get in our own way. Plus we tend to inherit our goals from our mother, our father, our drunk friends that we studied with in university. Oh, that sounds good. We'll charge after it without ever really thinking it through. So it's really important we know what we want before we decide to charge down, you know, anything. And I think one of the things I will say is that, you know, for instance, Susan Cain's book, I think, was a revelation for a lot of introverts, because it helped them realize that they could be a proud introvert. However, it inspired people to not feel bad about themselves for being a writer, a coder, a data entry person, a graphic designer that wanted a quiet life, where a lot of people felt that they should sell and they should run their own business. And they felt like that if they weren't doing those things or wanting a role in leadership, they were somewhat not living up to their potential, which is rubbish. The thing I will say, though, is the opposite also is true. Because, you know, one of the things that Susan Cain talked about that everybody seemed to miss is that she was a negotiator in her past, right? She could do it. And this is the biggest thing. Most introverts believe that they can't sell, they can't run their own small business, they can't run their own leadership. So we need to remove that barrier, because there are a lot of people that potentially, and especially in the United States, this is the case, it's less so in Australia, but in the United States, to get a high-paying job, a lot of the time you need to be in a position like sales if you're not degree qualified. And because of that, you know, a lot of people want to be in sales because of the high income it affords them and the life it can give their family. But a lot of introverts feel that they can't do that. Now, a lot of other people feel that they want to do their service their way for their ideal clients, but they feel like they can't start their own business. Or they accept not even trying to sell and market because they're introverted and then they can't. So a lot of people fail in business or don't pursue their dreams of business because they believe that they can't. So what we need to do, and you know, I teach HR managers this, I'm like, you could have the next Zig Ziglar, the best salesperson in the world or best sales trainer in the world in your organization, but because you're telling them they can't, they might believe you. But just because they may be able to be the next Zig Ziglar doesn't mean they want to be. So what we as organizations need to do, or what we need as individuals need to do, is break the belief problem. Once we break the belief problem, we then need to ask what we want, and more importantly, why we want it, so we know we're not taking on goals or objectives that aren't actually important to us, but it feels like a good idea. Once we've decided what we want, and an organization can then enable that, or we can enable it for ourselves, depending on where we sit in that, you know, business owner versus working for an organization equation. But belief comes first, because if you ask someone what they want, they may be redacting the fact that they want to be a negotiator or a salesperson or run their own business because they feel like they can't, and I will tell you, like, if you had have asked me when I had my data entry job if I wanted to be a salesperson, my answer would have been absolutely not. I couldn't think of anything worse. Would I want to be a data entry person now? Absolutely not. Now, for other people, that may not be the case, right? There are lots of people. I know one person that, you know, is part of my Rapid Growth Academy that he loves data. Like, he couldn't imagine doing anything else. Now, he has his own business because he wants to do data his way, and a lot of organizations get him to do the same data work all the time. So he just wants to play with data his entire life. He has to do the business ownership stuff part as well. So he chooses to have his own business. He doesn't choose to sell, but he knows that it's a necessary evil. And funnily enough, he now loves doing that piece because he's learned how to communicate data through story in a way that gets other people excited about data. And he loves that because now we can have great conversations.
Yeah, exactly. You can learn to love it.
Absolutely. But again, not that you should have to, as you said, right? Like, you don't need, if you love data and you love working for an organization that lets you do data, most people never get to do a job they love for the rest of their life. It doesn't mean you should say, oh, I feel bad because I'm not in sales. Or, you know, if you become the leader of that data analytics department, guess what? You may hate that. So you have to choose what you want. And then absolutely, you know, you can make anything happen.
Yeah, exactly. One thing we haven't been around, you write about storytelling in your book. And it just made me think that a question I get a lot is that introverted people who want to talk about the results, who maybe want to get a promotion or want to be better small talkers, they know they have to tell a story. They know they have to talk more, to be heard more. But they feel uncomfortable taking up the room, taking up so much time and space. What would be a good way for an introvert to be a better storyteller?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing most introverts get wrong is they don't feel uncomfortable taking up space when they're explaining something. They feel uncomfortable taking up space when they're telling a story because there's lots in their mind of unnecessary detail in that story. Well, that psychology is wrong because the truth is that most people, I mean, if I said, hey, do me a favor, watch a documentary for 30 minutes and let me know how many times you potentially get bored versus watch a 3-hour feature-length movie. The truth is that the feature-length movie, probably you'll have less boring spots as long as you're both watching a really, you know, engaging movie. So what I find is I will get somebody to explain what they do, and then I'll get them to tell a story in as big a, deeper way as they can. And then I ask them which one took longer, and they'll always say the story, even though the jargon actually took them longer to communicate. And then I'll ask the audience which one of those they felt took less time, and it was always the story by far. Because what happens is we feel as introverts that it's our job when we're, you know, trying to get a promotion is to educate them on all the things that we've done. When we're at a networking event, sometimes we fall into almost like a coaching session where we're giving them all this advice, or we start, you know, helping them, you know, with a something they're struggling with, or we just give them all this information. Or we might be in a leadership meeting, we tell all of our team, you know, all the steps in everything that they need to do. By the way, nobody remembers any of that stuff. So it's overwhelming and pointless for those people. Also, for you, you feel like you've done your job. Like in sales, we feel like it's our job to educate a client. And that is true because the true definition of sales is actually, it's the word sales is derived from the Scandinavian term to serve. Well, the best way to serve your clients is not that they fully understand, it's to take action that's in their best interest. Well, the best way to get somebody to take action is for them to feel like they understand it and for them to feel like they understand how it applies to them. And that's why stories work so well. Think back to the textbooks, the dry textbooks you remember at school. It was the examples that elucidated the point. Everything else was just jargon. So what I find is that, firstly, stories are a waste of time if they're not planned and prepared. When I'm out networking, I share the same story every single time. And the reason why I share the same story every single time is I'm great at telling it. Just like the story of how I met my wife, there's parts that I used to tell that people didn't enjoy so much, so I've removed. There are parts that people do enjoy, so I use more tonality changes and get more engaged with those elements. Now it's a theatrical masterpiece, but the story I use when I'm networking, the story that I, you know, one of the stories I tell from stage is the same one I do networking. When I'm on podcasts a lot of the time, you know, if we were talking about business growth, I would use that exact same story. Now, because I've done that, the people that hear it in a different way. Because what happens is when you tell logical fact, our logical brain hears it. And the logical part of the brain says, well, that'll work for me. That won't work for me. I'm not sure if I've got time for this. If they're cold calling, they'll hang up the phone or they'll interrupt or whatever. When you tell a story, it short circuits the logical brain. Your emotional brain literally yells out story time and it just listens and it takes all the detail as fact. And if it, here's the moral of the story is we work with someone just like you who had the same problem, we got them to a great return on investment or a great outcome, we can do the same for you, then they'll feel that and they'll want what Wendy had or what John had, and they'll feel like it's tangible and doable. And because of that, they'll take more action. Now, first thing a story stops you doing is putting all this unnecessary detail into the story because it doesn't make it a story anymore. The second thing is that when you tell a story, people remember up to 22 times more information, so it becomes more tangible. But the problem with the story is when you tell a story, even for 60 seconds, it feels like you've been speaking for 45 minutes. So what I like to do is I like to rehearse the story, I like to practice, and I need to make sure that there are emotional elements in the story, right? You know, I worked with a big global tech company once, billion-dollar tech company, and they told me this story of, and it was funny, I had to interview them for like 45 minutes just to get all the jargon out of the story. And they were like, and then I recited them back to them in like 45 seconds. They're like, well, how did you do that? And I'm like, well, I've got a really simple template. But, and by the way, you know, I give away that in my books, but in both my sales and my networking book, you know, I give you that framework. But the, what I did is I said, let me ask you a question though. You keep saying to me that this customer called out of the blue and after years of chasing them up, you know, they decided to move forward. Why? Well, it turned out that they didn't know. They had to go find out. Well, they had this mindset of if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. And I'm like, well, then it, so it broke. And they're like, yes. I said, when did it break? Just before Christmas. They couldn't run payroll. They had a government organization, thousands of staff, and the CTO that had this, if it ain't broke, don't fix it mindset was the guy that was responsible for all of those people not getting paid. And he had to keep his entire team in over the Christmas holiday so that everybody could get paid for, before New Year's Eve. Now, this guy was the guy that ruined Christmas.
Yeah.
And yet that part wasn't part of the story because we're trying to be efficient. Yet we put all the jargon in the story, right? But that now becomes this entertaining masterpiece about why, if it ain't broke, you don't fix it, isn't the right strategy. I said, but the problem is I can't feel the emotions of this guy that broke, that destroyed Christmas because you haven't given him a name, right? And a CTO doesn't have emotions. A company doesn't have emotions. David does. So David is the guy that ruined Christmas. As soon as I mention David, all of a sudden we can imagine a family, you know, his wife, his kids, the fact that everybody now probably hates him. And then at the end, David gets a promotion instead of getting fired, which is what he was worried about because of how well he handled it, right? Now all of a sudden it's this robust story that has emotional depth, which is why people will engage with it. So the truth is that usually most stories are told, if they are, like case studies, right? Customer reported to have this problem. We did this. We got them the outcome. That is, the moment you open your mouth to tell one of those stories, it's already too long. But when you tell jargon, that's even worse, actually. But when you tell a story and you include the emotional depth of this real person that had the problem and how you got them to a great outcome, truthfully, people will hang on. I mean, we've tried cold calls where C-level executives would hang up the phone after 8 seconds, and they were on the phone from 2 to 2.5 minutes on average, because once the story began, these people engaged, their brains short-circuited, and we spoke to the emotional mind. Think about the power that gives you in networking. Now, in networking, you don't want your story to be more than 3 or 4 minutes long, but 3 to 4 minutes long is going to feel like an eternity to you. It'll feel like a blip to them. And trust me, if you think you don't give them 2 to 3 minutes, 4 to 5 minutes worth of jargon when you're talking to them, they're going to get more bored through that. They won't retain any of that. You're doing that for you. You're telling stories for them. And networking, sales, I mean, even asking for a promotion, it shouldn't be about you. The number of times people go into asking for a promotion because they feel like they're the right candidate. It's all about me, as opposed to, I can see you need this, and this, and I feel like I can help in this way. Here's an example, and then tell a story.
Yeah, that was a really good answer. Even in the story about David, I could feel the change when you gave him a name.
Yeah, and that's why I do it that way, because the problem is that people would say, like, it's so easy for, you know, introverts to go, oh, I don't want to disclose the person's name. I mean, call David Sarah if you need to. Right? Nobody cares. Like, notice I didn't give you the global organization's name because I've got an NDA. I can't tell you who it is, right? But I can tell you that also David isn't the real person's name either, right? I had to change it, but that doesn't make the story untrue. It just means I'm protecting the people in the story, right? And I'm sharing this story in order to help other people, right? The thing is that if you go into any story with the mindset of my job, sales, to serve, my job is to serve, which is I'm not going to spew information out to make myself feel better. I know that they're not going to take that in. And truthfully, if I really care about people, I want them to change their life for the better. So if I'm a bad salesperson and I have a good product or a good service, I'm disadvantaging them by not using it, right? Again, if it's not about me, it's no longer I'm a salesperson, I'm making all this money, so I feel bad or I feel bad selling. It's my job's to serve, my product helps, and stories allow me to get people out of their own way in order to do that in a way that makes them feel like the situation's tangible enough that they can make a decision much faster, usually on the spot, as opposed to after months of, let me think about it, I'll get back to you, and then probably far fewer of them actually moving forward.
Oh, I could talk about this for hours. We have to round. Well, I only know that expression in Danish. I'll cut that out.
So we have to, what's the framing I think you're looking for? I think it's round this up.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah, we have to round this up. But I think maybe you could tell me what would be the first step for the listener who wants to be a better salesperson or wants to be a better networker, but maybe it sounds like it sounds too big. It's a big job. You have to read an entire book, two books maybe. What would be the first tiny step you could make after listening to this?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the first step is to know that you shouldn't be reading more than one book. And the reason for it is introverts do what I call classic busy procrastination. Because we don't want to do the action or we feel like we can't, we read 7 books on networking and we tell ourselves we're going to find the best out of all of them and put them together. Well, no, the reason why the person wrote the book is because they're the expert, right? So believe in whichever expert, even if it's not me, which is fine, find a expert that you can see value in and follow their process to the letter. Don't buy any book that isn't a regimented step-by-step process, because then you're doing yourself a disadvantage. The second thing is then allocate time to do this. Now, by the way, it's totally fine for you to say this is too much work, but that just means that you don't actually want to network. If you run your own business, you need to network, you need to get clients. Now, my book will say that I teach you how to master the networking room so you never have to go back to one, because once you've got your message clear, I mean, if you can't successfully articulate the value that you offer clients in a way that people go, oh my gosh, I need that, when somebody's politely listening for 2.5 minutes, you got no chance online when people give you fractions of a second. So once you get it clear though, you'd be nuts not to leverage online, because then people chase you. But if you as a person say, well, that's not important to me, and you run your own business, well, then you might want to really think about whether or not you should be in your own business. Maybe you just really want to do, maybe the reason for why you're in your own business is because you were constantly getting overlooked at work. Maybe you just really needed to learn how to communicate better at work. So maybe my books are the wrong ones. You need a book that helps you with career trajectory, because you perhaps went from job to job thinking the grass is greener, but no, you were still at every one of those jobs and you didn't have the skill set. So therefore you were taken advantage of perhaps. So then you started your own business and guess what? You're there too and you haven't learned the skill sets, but now all of a sudden you've got hundreds of bosses that don't take you seriously. So what you need to do is decide which book, what it is that you want. And if you really want something, and you tell yourself you really want it, and then you don't start to go down that path. Well, my suggestion, if you pick up my book, the very first thing I tell you to do is download the implementation training. And the implementation training focuses on helping you understand what it is you truly want and why. My networking book specifically focuses on passion in the second chapter, because if the pain's not worth the gain, you're not going to do the work. And if the pain's not worth the gain, you should definitely not be in your own business or putting yourself out of your comfort zone. Now, that's not to say that there wouldn't be another book that allow you to succeed in data entry or graphic design or whatnot. But again, my books are if you choose, as you well put it. Now, the framing on how to get started if you don't want to read a whole book, the truth is the biggest shift you need to make is the change of belief. Now, I put a ton of free content out on YouTube because that's how I learned. I put a ton of free content out on social media. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. You'll get a ton of content there. But what I would really suggest is pick one frontier. And what I mean by that is don't say I'm going to learn how to sell, network, public speak, and be a better leader. You'll fail at all of them. Say I'm going to choose how to sell. And if that's the case, download the first chapter. My publisher hates me when I say this. You do not need to buy the book. You can download the first chapter of The Introvert's Edge, and there I will help you overcome your belief issue that you can sell as an introvert. And then I will literally outline the 7 steps to a sale. If you do nothing more than put what you currently say in under those headings, you'll quickly realize that there's some things that don't fit. Throw that out. You shouldn't be saying it to customers. You'll realize there's some things out of order which you can fix. You'll realize there's some gaping holes, usually around asking the right questions, not just any questions, and telling great stories. If you fix that, you'll double your sales in the next 60 days. If you decide networking is the frontier you want to take, then download the first chapter of my networking book, and I'll do the same for you there. You know, my passion is helping introverts overcome that barrier, because sometimes just knowing we can puts us on that path to actually do the work that allows. So I'm not suggesting committing to buy my book or doing the work in my book, but commit to reading the first chapter of one of my books or somebody else's book, just to identify that, to understand that you can. And if you want to start with the networking book, you can get that at theintrovertsedge.com/networking.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Matthew. It's been such a pleasure.
It's been my absolute honor. Thank you for having me on.